Donegal has some of the most beautiful gardens in the country and a rich tradition of garden making that stretches back to monastic times and spans the county from the Fannet Peninsula to Donegal Bay. But these gardens are much more than beautiful spaces. Behind neat hedges and through the flower borders hide 100 stories of our history, our garden making, and the magnificent obsessions that inspire people to make and maintain these Edens. My name is Mary Brophy, and I'm once again heading down the garden path to explore 6 more of Donegal's best-loved gardens. From a farmed landscape to private havens, in this second series, I'll be considering what it means to garden in a time of climate crisis and biodiversity loss.
You could actually smell the burning last year. I thought the geraniums would never come back again, you know, but they did.
And experience the stunning plants and trees that inhabit these spaces.
These are Schefflerias. So these are native to Taiwan. They're relatively new on the scene.
As I discover how we can create beautiful, productive spaces that work for both wildlife and people.
We have such little problems with pests. There is a balance. It's not a monoculture.
And how we might evolve our definition of what a garden is or can become.
Gardens can be absolutely anything your imagination wants them to be.
In this third episode, I'm exploring a fascinating garden just outside Rafoe.
Well, when we came here, this was a field. There was nothing at all here. And that's 50 years ago.
That field first became a pony paddock. But over 5 decades, and as their children grew, Anne Kavanagh, along with her late husband Bob, created Rossbourne Garden. Anne was a teacher and Bob an agricultural advisor, and the couple shared a passion for gardening. Rossbourne is about 1.5 acres of gardens, with a Celtic and wildlife theme. And Anne begins by showing me a collection of some curious plants.
As we came down from the house, we came down a lovely little set of steps, down a little narrow path, and we've come out into this opening. And there is the most beautiful set of trees, two trees there behind you. What are they?
That's a walnut. So you have your walnuts on it. Oftentimes they're gone already and you can't see them, you know.
When was this planted?
I'd say 10 years ago, probably, yeah.
It's beautiful.
You know, of that. Yeah. So the garden where we were concerned, we're trying to do three things with it. We were trying to Irish mythology, the Celtic mythology, medicinal plants and wildlife.
So just as we've come in, I see a sign here that tells me medicinal plants. What do we have here in front of us?
Well, the first one is a hawthorn, and that was considered the father of the heart. So you can eat the leaves or the flowers in salads, and they're meant to be very good for your heart, strengthening the heart. The next one is a peppermint, and the peppermint is very good for the stomach and helps your digestive, sort of when you have problems with IBS and things like that. The milk thistle is, you can see the thistle with the stripes on it there.
It's got like a milky vein running through it, as if somebody, you know, just sprayed milk on it.
Literally, yeah. And it's very, very good for your liver.
To our contemporary ears, this might all sound a little strange. But long before there were chemists, there were gardens. And gardens were a source of healing for centuries. From monasteries in the Middle Ages, to wise women herbalists, to the earliest apothecaries, illness was treated with remedies made from plants grown in gardens or collected in the wild. Even today, we derive many of our medicines from the curative properties found in plants. But this heritage and knowledge is lost to our gardens and to most gardeners now, so much so we don't even recognise common healing herbs without a label or a sign, as I'm about to discover.
This one here now is arnica.
And arnica is good for bruises. And when the Irish, particularly after the famine, went to America, American Indians helped them and took on board showing them what to eat and what not to eat, and would have shown them things like arnica and the fact that they could use it on bruises for the children.
I mean, I've heard of the plant, but I've never seen it.
Yeah, it shouldn't be probably in so much shade there, but anyway. And now the next ones are a group of the immune boosters. So you've got our own one, which is the elder plant. And the ones in there are the echinaceas. And again, you know, everyone, I think, is taking echinacea now. Everyone knows about that. Again, another American plant. And the one here is the one that looks like a vetch. It's astragalus, and it's a Chinese immune booster. So, and there's another one there, oregano, and it is also meant to be an immune booster. The next one is sweet Sicily, and it looks very, very like your wild carrot or your St. Anne's lace and things like that, but it has a different smell off the leaf if you smell it there. And what it's used for is for taking the tartness out of rhubarb or gooseberries or anything like that, and therefore very good for diabetes because you won't need as much sugar. The evening primrose is very good for women's problems. So if you have menstrual problems and things like that.
I have never seen it, and I have to confess, in a plant form. Like, you know, I've seen it many, many times in capsules and, you know, when you're in the pharmacy or in a supermarket. But it is the most beautiful colour of a flower at the top. It's that lovely, lovely primrosy kind of yellow.
Yes, it is,
Very delicate. And would it, I mean, we're in pretty heavy shade here. Would it ordinarily be growing as long, or is it trying to get to the light?
Well, that too, yes. But no, I think it depends on the soil it gets as well as to whether it'll be low or high. You know, and so it's, as I say, it's growing wild out the back of the garden there, so when we get down there you'll see it. Now this is companion planting, and companion planting is about trying to distract the wildlife from your beans or carrots or like the carrot fly or your cabbages. And you would put savory with the beans. And also, if you cook them together, it's meant to enhance them as well. And carrot and sage, and the thyme and the cabbage there.
Thyme is just will stop the cabbage butterfly. Will it just?
Well, I don't know that it will, but there aren't that many holes in my cabbage.
No,
you know,
there aren't. They look pretty good, and especially all these lovely young leaves coming back up again.
There's couple of plants over here that you might be interested in.
Beautiful plectrum here as we pass by.
Yes. these are mulberries here.
Mulberries.
Sorry. And when the mulberry leaves come out, you can then put out your bedding plants. Before they say mulberries won't come out until all sign of frost is gone.
Really?
So you can put out your window boxes and things like that when you see the mulberries out. I had hoped at this stage to have some berries or that, but and they're there. They must be there 15 years or so, but they haven't. And the way they're shaped, we're meant to put a seat there in the middle so the sun would come down. But that hasn't been done either.
It's late plans of all gardeners. But are mulberries slow to fruit? Like, were you...
I think they must be, or maybe it's up here and we haven't had the weather. I've seen them down south in fruit, but not up here.
If nothing else, as a frost indicator, they'd be a really useful plant in a lot of gardens.
Up here, I'd say it's in walled gardens, maybe.
Right.
You know.
Okay.
Yeah. And you have to realise, Rapo is one of the highest towns in Ireland, and therefore we're so high up that we must be one of the coolest places. And the ginkgo biloba. Very good for your small little capillaries. And it was the plant that came back after the Hiroshima bombings. So the first, it's a real prehistoric plant. I mean, you can't kill it. A real survivor, yes.
I understand that one in after the atomic bomb, like it was literally bent over and looked like it was crisped and then just started to rebud and regrow again. But it is one of the most beautiful leaves and so distinctive. Like it does feel prehistoric.
Yeah, but it has, if you get ones with fruit on them, I gather the stench again is
something. Can be quite something.
Yes, you don't really want the fruit.
Yeah.
Many of the plants with medicinal properties Anne has collected in her garden originate from ancient Asian and Native American cultures. In Ireland, Brehon Law manuscripts provide accounts of herbal remedies and the organised role of the healer in society dating back to medieval times. an Irish herbal physician, or Liag, in the 15th century, was well trained, with knowledge passed from generation to generation in family lines.
So we're back out under the walnut tree and coming back out into the sun.
Yes.
A lovely little pop of colour here to our right with the daylilies.
The daylilies, absolutely.
You're bringing us to another part of the garden now.
Yep.
If Anne is reaching back into the annals of plants for old knowledge, the garden is also peppered with references to our mythological and Celtic past. As we turn a corner, I'm greeted by a Celtic patroness of healers.
So we have St. Bridget, again back to the mythology. And she's more a modern St. Bridget now than the old-fashioned one.
It's a lovely stone circle. The cross then is made out of pipes,
yeah.
Is it?
Yes.
And that's embedded into the cement. And then just through some birch trees, we have this lovely... Is it a cement statue?
Yes, yeah.
It's a lovely, simple figure, but it just creates a very peaceful kind of atmosphere in there.
Yeah. But St. Bridget was the one who straddled the old and the new, the prehistoric, the goddess Bridget. And they couldn't drown her out when the Christians came, so they decided to incorporate her into our Christian beliefs. And she was made a bishop. The other bishops said that there had never been a lady. You see, Lindisfarne changed that when the Romans came, but the Celtics had female bishops as well as male bishops, and Bridget was a bishop. There's birches there. Now, the birches are the plant. They're the first letter of the Om alphabet, but they're also the plant that when Dermot and Grainne, we're into our mythology now, when Dermot and Grainne were running away from Fionn Mac Cumhail, he'd have got the birch twigs to make a bed for her. As I say, I presume he put a deer skin or something over the twigs, but to get it up off the ground in the drought, you know, dry.
We're very obviously going downhill now. You really get a sense of your location here, Anne.
Yes. Down here we have a wildlife area. And I'll just take you down to it, because when we're talking wildlife, I better take you and let you see the wild end of it. That's a Drimnus, that's a Nazara. So, and that then is the another of our compost heaps. And I have tubes in there, and they're the pipes. Hopefully, when we have that, when they haven't got so much human activity, we might get foxes or that coming into it. You know, I'd hope that they'll come and make a bed there, you know.
So you've already created the home underneath.
Hopefully.
As we've come in here, Anne, it's actually a lovely warm day here in Donegal.
It is, yeah.
And this entire glade is so much cooler now. But you are surrounded by flying insects, and it's noticeable given how in other places we're not seeing them.
Yes.
You know, you've created the right conditions here for them.
Well, hopefully. That's what we're trying to do anyway, yeah. And I mean, even some things like butterflies. I don't think I've ever seen a blue, common blue here. But we have holly growing that if they come in, they have something to land on and eat. And so we do try. That's what we're trying to do, yeah. So now there's a stream running right at the end of the garden all the way down, but that's really the only place where you can see it. The lichens then, where you've got lichens growing on, and the rocks used to be covered in lichens, where the lichens are growing, it means the air is very pure.
As we pass another decent clump of bramble, and they're just beginning to start to set the fruit.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me that if you keep it in check, you're getting access to really good crop blackberries every year.
Yes, but I never see them, the birds. But that's great, that's what they're there for.
That's exactly what they're there for, and they have them gone.
What I'm told, love that, and we did have, absolutely, we still have a few, but not so many, long-tailed tits. That's where they love to build their nests, in the middle of scrub like that.
So that's a bank of bramble and little bits of bracken and some yeah. ground elder and coming back up to it. Like, it's low enough, though. It's yeah. not, it, yeah. I mean, it's not out of control. It's obviously managed to a degree.
To a degree, yes, and to a degree.
Is that a problem for us as gardeners, that there's this constant impulse to have everything neat and tidy?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, and you'll find that, you know, I have a young fellow who comes in now to help me, and he mowed the lawn and that, and it's perfect. There isn't a blade of grass on it, you know, that type of thing. Well, you wouldn't call it a lawn anyway, but of the grass anyway. You know, yes, we're inclined to. And if people come in and they see something that's... Oh, so I did have visitors earlier in the year, I don't know where they were from, Germany or somewhere, and they said, you need a bit of help here, don't you? And I kept trying to explain to them, no, this is no mow. May and we're not mowing anything, but they seem to think it, yes, it needed to be kept under control. So yes, we do.
I think from the wider landscape right back to our gardens, there probably needs to be a little bit of a mind shift that we need to find ways to share both the aesthetic and the environment, habitat.
The grey squirrel, someone came in here one day and they said they thought they saw grey, and I nearly flipped. But there are grey squirrels around, but to the best of my knowledge, we don't have any here. But we have the red squirrel. I've seen it on my nut pockets, and they'll eat it. But you'll never see them. They're just so shy. It's such a shy animal. And it's just trying to, if the farmers are being told, which Bob would have been telling them, get rid of your ditches and make bigger fields, and this was what was coming out from the top places, and sow your grain and things like this in the bigger fields, then all the animals, they don't have the hedgerows, they don't have the roadways to go from one place to another, and there isn't the feed there for them. And so it was partly all of that to try and curtail, I suppose, or have a pocket somewhere. I mean, we've no curlews much anymore, but it's not that one I'm trying to think of. The
corn crake,
yeah.
Did Bob's profession and your interest in terms of, like, you know, he would be advising farmers one thing, and you're looking at the effects of that. Yeah. Did that create interesting conversations around the dinner table?
Sometimes, yes. But no, he sort of agreed with me, but he was being told sort of what to do from on high, so he didn't have much choice in the matter, you know.
Yeah.
In today's third episode of Down the Garden Path, I'm at Rossbourne Garden in Raphoe with owner Anne Kavanagh, a remarkable gardener who, with her late husband Bob, has created a fascinating space that celebrates our Celtic and prehistoric past.
Oh, this is beautiful, Anne. So there's a ring of copper beech, but it's mature, like you've allowed it to, the hedge to get quite high and kind of gnarly, and it creates this lovely aged effect. And it's a circle, and I see there's a statue here in the centre of the circle.
There is indeed.
What's the significance of that?
Well, we were thinking of the we got a present of the statue, that was that one, but the circle was about the stone circle up in Beltinney, and it was a sort of a replica stone circle to, you know, to just bring the mythology down into our own area.
As I've been discovering, this garden reflects an ancient wisdom, as one that considers all things in harmony with the natural world, working with nature and not against it for our benefit. It's partly where Anne's interest in medicinal herbal plants stems from. Her garden may be an apothecary's cabinet, but it's one she's cautious about.
So this is a poisonous plant area. Your Lily of the Valley is good for the heart if you know what you're doing.
Yes.
The Digitalis, the foxgloves, again, if you know what you're doing. That's euphorbia. Now, there's aconite, or there should be aconite in there anyway. Aconite is deadly poisonous.
Yes.
And Agatha Christie wrote a story about aconite and killed off one of her people.
Characters in it.
In it, yeah. There's another plant way back at the back. Scuffola. It's the plant that they give 007 to get him to tell the truth plant. Yeah. So
and the yew then, either side.
The yew then is good for the cancer now. They're using it, or they're doing research on it to check out cancer.
Yeah.
The blackthorn is one of the plants that if you get a prod with it or anything, it'll turn septic. And the result is you'll basically almost have to go to the doctor to get antibiotics for it. Yeah, you need to be very careful of the blackthorn, yeah.
While certain plants like yew have medicinal properties, they can also have toxic, poisonous and sometimes lethal side effects. Sometimes, as in the case of yew, it is the plant's very toxicity that offers clues to a treatment. Poisonous alkaloids in yew prevent cell division in humans and animals and can be deadly. But in the 1990s, scientists discovered that certain compounds extracted from yew needles can be lethal to leukemia cells in humans, stopping them from growing. As Anne tells me, you have to be very careful and you have to know what you're doing.
The Irish folk cures, though, have a rich tradition. I mean, we were talking just there as we walked around the garden about St. Bridget.
Yeah.
With all that, like, rich tradition, I mean, it's a heritage that we've lost in our own everyday gardens now, isn't it?
It is, yeah, completely, yeah. We don't, you know, I tell myself I'll go out, so there's a salad vernette just there, and I tell myself I'll go out and pick it, but sure, I never do. Yeah. You know, I think I will, but, and I say, I must leave it there now, I might use it yet.
Anne trained as a herbalist some years ago, but she doesn't make up remedies or ointments from these plants herself. If she wants to take a traditional immune booster, for instance, she buys some at her local health food store. We no longer need our gardens to be our doctor. And so without that necessity, we no longer know what plants are good for, what parts to avoid, and how complex even common weeds can be.
The dandelion, for instance, has potassium in it. So if you're taking the dandelion as a diuretic, you're getting your potassium. But if you're taking a water tablet, you really need to be taking potassium to keep the balance of in your system, you know.
Yeah.
And an awful lot of the plants have both. They have the
cure and the rebalancing.
Yes. Yeah.
Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah. Yeah.
So do you take dandelion if you ever have a stomach problem?
No.
But that tradition also has, like, that loss of... we have a very excitable pup here beside us. And he wants to talk to us. But that... that rich heritage that was there and the fact that it's been lost is not just a loss for a garden or a knowledge. There's a bigger danger there, isn't there?
There is. And I mean, if you take the Amazon and the way they're getting rid of all the plants in the Amazon, we're not going to be able to go through those plants and see what will help us. It's a bit like what I was saying earlier about the bees and the Varroa virus and the thyme helping them. But if we don't have them, they're not going to adapt. You know, if they're all destroyed, and I mean, the fires today, of course, is another story. But you can't, well, some of them were deliberate, that, you know, yeah. And that's another story too. But I mean, getting rid of all the plants on the Amazon is scandalous.
But is there something to what, like, say, what you've been doing? You're almost keeping them as a repository, that you have these plants in active growth. You know, is it important that we have these plants growing, even if we're not going to use them, so that there will be somewhere?
So that they're there for the people in the long run, yeah, or even for the pharmaceuticals and that in the long run.
At the end of this garden's path, I come to one of the educational signposts Anne has dotted around her garden for visitors to Rosbourne. Then for me, it kind of sums up this garden and our conversation.
There's a lovely phrase on the top of this one, which is just about the wild plants and flowers of Ireland. We cannot recreate what has been lost, only conserve what remains.
Yeah,
and that's really the heart of this garden, isn't it, Anne?
That's what we're trying to do, yeah.
While the use of herbal remedies has a long tradition of use in treating illness, some plants can be highly toxic. They can have serious side effects and cause allergic reactions, or may interact negatively with conventional medications. The content in this episode is not presented as advice and should not be used to self-diagnose. The information presented here does not seek to diagnose disease or to replace the advice and care of your doctor. You should always consult your GP or a qualified healthcare professional about any illness or treatment. Next time on Down the Garden Path.
And there was only one swallow there that used to nest.
in her shed until last year, and I know the temperatures in the Sahara were about 40 and 50 degrees, so I'd imagine the poor birds couldn't get up here. It's worrying.
Down the Garden Path is written and presented by Mary Brophy and produced by Neil Boyle. It is an IWR media production for Highland Radio, funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee.